Good morning and welcome to our Sunday morning meeting. The declaration on the back of our periodical is the one guiding document for the operation of any ULT anywhere in the world and for any individual associate with that ULT. Its purpose is to allow us to continue to keep the teachings of Theosophy alive in front of the public by referring to the original writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. The work for any associate is to the attempt to exemplify in practice universal brotherhood through a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction that brotherhood is a reality, not a utopian wish. It is a fact of life. Since the basis for union among Theosophists is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, there's no need for a constitution or bylaws or officers. Now, there aren't many groups that you will ever come to that operate on such a standard, because how do you operate with nobody telling everybody else what to do? It is a voluntary association. And because it is an association, not an organization, it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its purposes, no matter what their associations are with other groups. And it encourages anyone who is willing to help and teach others these basic, fundamental, universal principles. So to carry on the work here in Philadelphia, we have the Sunday morning meeting from 11 to 12. And our subject for today is the causes of cataclysms. And next Sunday is the interdependence of the kingdoms. This is all under the topic of care of the earth. And then in March, we'll start on the mysteries of the mind. On Wednesday evenings, we're in the middle of studying the ocean of Theosophy. And this Wednesday night, we start on the subject of karma. The work done at this lodge, or any lodge, is done on the basis of voluntary contributions, of time, of service, of energy, but especially of donations of funds to keep the building open, to keep us able to present these ideas. Now, before we get into our subject this morning, we would just like to gently remind all of you that anyone who's up here presenting these ideas is presenting the ideas of Theosophy to the best of their ability from having made the attempt to study them. They don't pretend or claim to understand all that they give out, or to encompass all that they give out. It's an effort of a student to provide thoughts on a certain topic based on what the writings tell us. And the object of that is to make you want to go and pursue the subject yourself, to do your own studying, because all you ever get from lectures or classes is little seeds. You have to make the effort for yourself. So, what is a cataclysm? That's the first thing we have to realize. It's defined as a large-scale and violent event in the natural world. That is a cataclysm. However, if a violent event happens in our neighborhood, that's pretty large-scale to us. So we're going to look at the large first and then the minor or periodical. And what we'll be using is from the Ocean of Theosophy, so you can yourself go back and review these from chapter 2 and then from chapter 14. So these are Mr. Judge's words. When a world or a system comes to the end of certain great cycles, men record a cataclysm in history or tradition. These traditions abound, all pointing to early teaching and dim recollection of the periodical destructions and renovations. Just as there are periodical minor cataclysms or partial destructions, so there is the universal evolution and involution. So we begin with the universal. Mr. Judge, the doctrine is that the solar system and the globe we are now on will come to an end when the force behind the whole mass of seen and unseen matter has reached its limit of duration under cyclic law. The force at work and determining the great cycle is that of man himself, considered as a spiritual being, humanity. When he is done using the globe, he leaves it, and then with him goes out the force holding all together. The consequence is dissolution by fire or water or whatnot, these phenomena being simply effects, not causes. So in this great cycle of Earth and life on Earth brings the globe forth, and the completion of that evolution causes its destruction. At the intersection of great cycles, dynamic effects follow and alter the surface of the planet by reason of the shifting of the poles of the globe or other convulsion. That there have been vast and awful disturbances in the strata of the world is admitted on every hand and now needs no proof. On the physical plane, effects are brought out through the electrical and fluids acting with the gases on the solids of the globe. Some of you may even understand that. We don't. At the change of a great cycle, they reach what may be termed the exploding point and cause violent convulsions of the following classes. A, earthquakes. B, floods. C, fire. D, ice. Now, Mr. Judge gives specifics on each of these four classes, which can come up in the discussion. And we're told that part of the effort of these cataclysms is to remove the land so that it rests from the activity that has been taking place upon it, and then it will come back up again refreshed. Every great continent and root race must eventually come to an end under cyclic and karmic law, and then it's destroyed. Oddly enough, it's an alternating destruction, fire or water. Just as Lemuria was destroyed by fire, Atlantis was destroyed by water. So this continent will one day be destroyed through cataclysmic operations. And to end this part, in the Secret Doctrine, we find, HPV says, as we are assured by archaic scientists that all such geological cataclysms from the upheaval of emotion, yeah, well, that's true, from the upheaval of oceans, deluges, and shifting of continents down to the present year's cyclones, hurricanes, earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, tidal waves, and even the extraordinary weather and seeming shifting of seasons, which perplexes all European and American meteorologists, now this was written in 1888, but it sounds like today, are due to and depend on the moon and planets. Aye, that even modest and neglected constellations have the greatest influence on the meteorological and cosmical changes over and within our Earth. So we see there is no easy answer to the causes of cataclysm, except that they do come under law, and there is an individual aspect of every one of us and how we affect the Earth. So we'll hear about that now.
Now for this part, I have stuff from information from HPB, from the Secret Doctrine, Mr. Judge, and Mr. Crosby. So if we look at the idea that all the diseases are caused by mankind, individually and collectively, even these catastrophics in nature are the results on man's misunderstanding of his or her own nature, and that thinking and acting based upon it. So this gives us a beginning to start to think of that where we are connected to these causes. And then the idea, coming back of the idea of the way we think and how we act upon what we think. So, the whole order of nature shows clearly a progress and a progressive march towards a higher life. We need to be working on our own nature to understand this idea. It's much closer than we think. Now, it's stated that the spiritual power that lies in our own thinking goes much farther than the formulation of it. We need to question that. We need to check it. All nature is an outbreathing and an inbreathing. Man only lives by such action. The same law, hence that positive part of our nature and that negative part of our nature. What we see within the universe and with our planet is very much connected with it, with us, and our inner connection mostly. We are constantly following the line of separateness, or are we doing the line of unity? So we have to ask ourselves, when we look at those two different ways, separateness or unity, what's the motive? That's a key part of our nature. What is the motive? Our determining factor in our thoughts and feelings. Do we actually question that, or do we just move on from situation to situation? And it tells us each human being lives in the close embrace of nature. We move in that. And nature has to realize that his being is within his nature. So that's something we need to walk to and to think about also. It also brings up that it is our complaints about the environment which are attempts to dodge our responsibility. Now, there is a point that a lot of us don't even think about. We complain about it, we discuss about it, but do we realize at all a lot of it has to do, and the causes and the development comes from the vast majority of the planet's people and their thinking and action. So whatever one produces finds its return from all parts of nature, from fire, air, earth, and water. For all the elements are but the embodiments of so many degrees of intelligence. That's another idea that we never keenly think of, maybe in detail, is there is intelligence in all of this. We don't see it because we're only looking at the surface. And it says, just as the universal evolution is septenary, so the evolution of humanity is sevenfold in its constitution and is carried on upon a septenary earth. So the combination right there, think of all the sevens that of development within the earth, and then we can connect that with the seven departments that make man up. It is the human effects through human thoughts. There's a lot of power in that, and a lot of people we never question. We bring in things in our mind and we either act on it or we don't. And we do the same thing as bringing it into our way of thinking is our way of expressing it out to others. So it is our human effects that really cause all this. And unless we recognize that our own nature and the nature of the lower kingdoms, we cannot do our duty by our own nature, not by the nature of the kingdoms below us. Forces of nature cannot be denied, for it is a fact in the whole cosmos. That sevening constantly comes up. Sevening of connections of planets, of everything. And it states that no energy or force without matter, and no matter without force, call it energy or life, however latent, it exists. We have to have that. The force needs to have something to work through, and that is matter. Matter can't move without some sort of intelligence or force behind it. So it says, man's negative forces, feelings of strong resentment such as envy, jealousy, anger, and that so-called moral judgment that we all claim to possess. And where did we get those from? We really don't know, because most of it is from somebody else, and we've adopted it and made it our moral judgments. So it's not something that we have earned or understand. It's just something we, as like a sponge, we just seep it in. Now, it in commenting on this idea of the cycles, we wanted to also bring us a lot of the first part was through Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. There is also that companion book, The Answers to Questions on the Ocean of Theosophy, and in the very back of it is a supplement that carries through all of them. But these answers to questions, these questions that are in this book, are questions that we've all wondered about or still puzzled about. So this whole idea of these cycles of things reoccurring and reoccurring, and hopefully through those building of those cycles, we are gaining something from it, something that we can understand and have some sort of balance or harmony with. And it says, many earthly catastrophes which serve to make physical disruptions of humanity, and we can honestly see that. And it seems like if you start to study history of this globe, of this earth, we will see that periodically we have had all of these, and such as the disappearance of old continents. And from that, we have the establishment of new lands to come. And it is here in the Americas, when this came up, that most of the work will be coming to be done, the amalgamation of all peoples from all races, from all different levels of intelligence, of feelings, of inner real natures. So we are very much involved in a lot of the stuff that we see, whether it be the fires on the West Coast, whether it be the Arctic snows and blizzards, whether it be the hurricanes and the tornadoes, and the rush of water taking up all of the land, disrupting all humanity and the animal nature and the vegetable nature, and including the mineral nature. If we could just think of here on the East Coast, how often we get effects from so far away, but what does it do to our beaches and our sands, and how it keeps pulling it away? So we are affected by all of these catastrophes. But the idea of thinking how we might be those involved in the causes of these effects, have we ever really questioned it or wondered why? And we feel that through the secret doctrine, through the ocean, through the key of theosophy, and then the devotional books that give us an insight of how powerful we really could be if we put our minds to it and then our actions. So that's the case on both sides.
Before we go to your questions, we'd like to read these two, the last two aphorisms of karma. Yeah. Because they really explain our relationship to these causes. 30, karma operates to produce cataclysms of nature by concatenation through the mental and astral planes of being. A cataclysm may be traced to an immediate physical cause, such as internal fire and atmospheric disturbances, but these have been brought on by the disturbance created through the dynamic power of human thought. 31. Egos who have no karmic connection with a portion of the globe where cataclysm is coming are kept without the latter's operation in two ways. A, by repulsion acting on their inner nature, and B, by being called and warned by those who watch the progress of the world. Mm. So your questions on the causes, oh my goodness, yes.
Well, when it comes to, it would seem, you know, the arguments so often against the reality of global climate change, mm-hmm. is unfortunately, that argument is unfortunately made typically by physical scientists trying to prove physical stuff. And wouldn't it be wonderful if there could be a greater emphasis placed on the ethics, the morality, the responsibility, so people can own it more? Mm. That might be one of the answers.
But
to
do you really think science would take that on?
Not a chance. Others would have.
The odd thing for students of the ancient wisdom is looking at climate change and realizing that both sides have a portion of the truth, that the climate changes are cyclical. But it is also that we, in our behavior and our use of Earth and the resources, we have increased the potential for disaster than would have been. Do any of you think anything will happen to keep this from getting worse? Do you? No?
What, the whole climate change thing?
Right.
Well, really, we think that the you know, just the profit motive, people who are so focused on that, would have to have the arrival of its own Gandhi to enlighten people as to what it is. You know, short of an inner understanding of really what's going on, we can't imagine that it's going to stop, because it's in so many other countries. And you can't blame them.
Right.
They're able to pull themselves up from poverty and provide fresh water and food for all their people by polluting.
Well, we've always thought one of the saddest things is sort of the arrogance of the people who have developed and have wealth and products. Like when the Amazon started being...
destroyed.
Destroyed, yes, in portions and segments. And the uproar from the civilized, sophisticated world, when we had already done the same thing. So instead of coming to some term of, here's how we can help you, it was more, we abhor what you're doing, and you should stop doing it. And there's a kind of arrogance in that. Yes, we need either a Thomas Paine or a Gandhi or somebody who will wake us up.
Or we might need just ourselves by just taking advantage of what we have. And we can see there are so many programs on television now dealing with animals, dealing with the lands, dealing with disasters, and the fact that we know instantaneously what's happening around the world is, you know, you listen to the news at night and it's like one thing after another. Life 50, 60 years back was completely different. Now we know instantaneously what's happening when a volcano erupts. And it's just difficult for us to understand it, but if someone takes some notice of those, even in the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom, they seem to, shall we say, move with it or somehow make the connection or make the correction without any help outside of their unity.
We were hoping that because of what's happening, we think it's in Kenya, they will be totally without water. Totally by April. And you can watch it if you go and on the internet, you can see how the reservoir is shrinking and shrinking. And we think that water will be the issue that will make us all grow up and be responsible. Yes.
When this part was written, since that time, the invention of the electrocardiogram, the invention of electrical medical techniques, which warned the doctor there was a disturbance in that person. Generally, it could be traced back to a mental attitude then or in the past. So we have been impressed by those terms, man, know thyself. And when we look at it from that point of view, we can expand it to include a drought, include electrical conditions, earthquakes, all can be traced to the highest form of life on earth,
right?
Man.
You know, the philosophy says that those cataclysms that are sort of localized are directly relatable to a necessary safety valve, that in a particular area, the thinking and feeling of people is so strong and so negative that nature has to have a way to deal with what's been created that's out there as an electrical astral force. And you have a tornado or a volcano. We've often thought about these cataclysms because here in the United States, we may get an earthquake or two. Like, did you see yesterday? London had an earthquake. Small, but they could feel it. But we've often thought the most terrifying thing would be an earthquake. Almost anything else, you can see perhaps a safety path. You may not be able to get away, but you can at least see a chance. With an earthquake, you don't know where anything's coming from. Yes?
We wonder what it is about animals that they know so far in advance about an earthquake. We wonder, is it a physical sensitivity to the vibration of the earth, or is it a metaphysical?
We think it's a very keen sense. If we look at the animals,
because we should be able to do it too.
Instinctively. And if you see any of these shows, whether they be about elephants, whether they be about the apes, whatever, whether they be about birds of flight, I mean, how do they know it's time to leave? It's instinctually the intelligence, not the self-consciousness that we have, but instinct is of a keener sense in their conditions. And they sense it, they know it. They don't need to be told, it's time to migrate now, it's time to leave, winter's coming. It's the whole situation. On those kingdoms, same thing with the plants, same thing to a certain degree with the minerals. They have a keen sense within their intelligence of knowing, of feeling the con, of sensing it. It's in the air, shall we say.
But there's also the psychic aspect of it. Anyone who's had a pet knows, for instance, a cat. A cat will go and sit at the front door waiting for someone to come, and they'll be there in a few minutes. So there is a greater sense of the inner life of the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
That a few minutes or maybe a half hour before, I mean, they did not know about it,
but
people said that all of a sudden the birds started, you know, disappearing. And from what we understand, a lot of likely tsunamis with the storms, that there's some kind of a change in barometric pressure.
Sure.
That the animals are more sensitive to, and it just seems that they know that they have to get away. Maybe they don't even realize why or where, but like instinctively, but we think a lot of it has to do with the electrical change, especially with hurricanes, with the electrical change and the barometric pressure changes that they're much more sensitive to those things than we are. Mm-hmm.
True. Yes.
He had his hand up first.
Oh, well, it was kind of on that same order, actually. But we can observe the animals, and also the sea retreats rapidly. Mm-hmm. When it starts to, you better run for the hills. But we need to watch our thoughts always, because it's like the word was used, concatenation, the coming together of a whole lot of different causes at once, and then it's explosive in some sort of way. Nature, it becomes violent.
they're different causes only because each person brings an individual sort of feeling to it, but it's really one cause, the negativity of our feeling. One of the problems is that we think that thought is nothing. It's just private to us, and it doesn't affect anybody else unless we act on it. But nature says, no, you're a thinker. Your thoughts are more powerful than your actions. Your actions are just a dead expression of your thoughts. So that's where you have to take control and begin to, yes?
Yeah, what we meant was concatenation, the coming together of the natural forces is the result of our thought.
Yes.
That is, you know, it just, you know, we should always watch our thoughts.
And we think, don't we all know of someone or some ones who have these same things? Someone who has a personality that they're very physical about. They literally explode. Those who have a keen sense of anger to such an extent that, again, they sort of physically and mentally lose control. People who have different feelings about things can express them different ways, but we've seen these tornadoes approaching through individuals. We might have acquaintances right in our own families. We've seen volcano explosions within individuals, how they act and how they explode on things. So we see a lot of these tendencies. Right. We can see a storm coming. We've seen it in people. It can develop slowly, but then finally it expresses itself outward. So we're very connected in that. Same senses, same feelings.
But what's interesting is an explosive person may, after the explosion, put it all aside, forget it, let it go, where the person who remains calm may be holding things within themselves and be getting angrier and angrier, but they never express it, and it eats away at them. Yes?
Well, among the Native Americans, there were members of the tribe who had a very important part to play, and that was the scout. He would travel miles from the tribe, sit down on a hillside, and sit there for hours, perhaps he'd been seen. Then he would get up and go back and tell the council what was happening miles away or within the vicinity of their own camp. Self-control. He took a look, he concentrated himself, and we have that word called meditation. So there are some very interesting stories. Mm-hmm. He would walk through the woods, wouldn't notice anything. He would notice a leaf that's out of place. Or he would smell something. So when we come and study those ideas in that fashion, we get a true sense of the term magnetism. And we can go from there and go on. Mental attitude is the number one point of view.
Yes, and mental attitude goes back to motive. But we just wanted to add to your wonderful description. We recall reading about a different kind of scouting, like one who was going out to see how big the herd of buffalo or whatever was. And without seeing it, hearing it in motion, they could say how large it was.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a question of perfecting your senses along with your intuition.
So when at the end of a period of manifestation, when there's the cataclysms, is that all?
wait, are you talking about the end? End?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that just a natural event that occurs, or is that caused by the human thoughts and feelings as well?
But not by the human thoughts and feelings, but by the humans no longer needing the school that was created for them. So how are you going to build a new school if you don't get rid of the one you have? So it is natural. It is part of the cycle. But it's humanity that causes it to happen. So we have to remember, cataclysms are not necessarily negative. They are a way of getting rid of something that's been used up, or allowing that matter to have a rest from all the activity and tension that's on it. So it doesn't tell us how exactly it will end, but when it does end, it will be in the seventh round, seventh race. We won't have physical bodies. So the whatever physical matter of the earth is there to be destroyed will not really affect us. We'll be active on inner and mental planes.
And we have to remember, we are electric, magnetic. It's in our real inner senses. And we have the same ability as, for instance, the animal kingdom, to be able to sense things prior to them coming. If we would learn how to silence all this outside stuff that we have bombarding us all the time. Yeah.
But when we move into cities and a civilization, we don't use all those senses anymore. We use other senses, or we use our senses differently. We kind of have to be able to read people better.
Survival.
Right. So we think if there were cataclysms and we had to go back, which we will at some point, that we'll still have those senses, but we'll be forced into using them that we don't use them now.
Well, according to Theosophy, though, as was said, the important senses that we need to start using are the moral ones. What is my moral responsibility? What is my moral reaction to the things going on around me and within me? Because that I can control. And that is the precursor to planting the right seeds in nature.
And you know, we've noticed lately that children, young people, young as far as we're concerned, they have a sense prior practically to the actual situation that it is the youth that are going out and helping, that are getting collections for this and seeing how this can be done, having those marathon dances so they can gather up money to help individuals, to the little lemonade stands. The youth are really, shall we say, we could learn a lot from the youth today, because instinctually they know to try to give, to try to help in some way or other. Whereas if you go back earlier times, you didn't see this coming from them naturally. It was something that came from outside. This isn't eternal. They have a sense of feeling, of knowing. And we wonder, when they watch the news, how we find that so many people, parents, feel, how do I explain this to my children? Because they're asking me questions I can't understand to explain to them. That's that of the future. The future mind beings that are coming through.
But we think the youth of the past was probably as hungry for answers and solutions, but the world around them ignored them or dictated certain dogmatic things, either materialistically or religiously. This is the way it is. And we were shot down or shut down very early on. Did you have your hand up?
So with like anger and like destructive forces and things like that, it made me think of like the wildfires in California when they, sometimes they have them, it's healthy for them to express themselves, but to have that in like a controlled way and not to like let it
go.
Totally release, but so it just reminded me of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, controlled. But there's also times when a fire is not controlled, but still it doesn't destroy everything. And something new comes from the ground after that fire. But our problem is that there's so much anger. Many of the fires that happened in California were set by people.
Yeah.
We live in a strange time, as was mentioned. We see very quickly what's going on. Yes?
Well, maybe this isn't a question you have the answer to, but it does seem like there's a lot of anger in our society right now. And why is there so much anger? Like, it's a different kind of anger than in the past, maybe? Because like when you had religious conflict or group conflict, it was more of a group motivated anger. But I think that what we have in our society right now is very individual, like individualized sort of expressions of anger or outrage.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the cause of it?
Well, in some ways, the cause of it is a deep realization that we are digging ourselves into an impossible hole. And people want to do something about it. They just don't know what to do. We think the biggest difference, and it has to do, again, with the internet, with the social media, all of a sudden people have the feeling your opinion matters. It should be told to everybody in the world. And most people have opinions that are prejudiced. Either someone told them something and they believed it. It's sort of half digested.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a lot of noise that causes other people to react very violently without bothering to find out the truth of something. But the anger can be a good thing. If you get mad enough at yourself, you will change. You will stop doing what you're doing. So there's great hope in it.
Yeah, and the other thing we were thinking is for the majority of what's going on through this whole globe is the injustice, the out of balance, the lack of harmony, the give and take. It's gotten too many people you see today do not really interact with others. They're interacting with a little thing in their hand. life has gotten very busy, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll get busier yet. We have yet to see. It says, you know, in the teachings that in past lives, we are those Atlanteans.
Mm-hmm.
And we made parts of imbalance, disharmony. And we have yet, in all the lives that we have probably gone through, yet have the true feeling of what the extent it was. We have yet to meet it, to balance it, to get the harmony back for our injustice that was done by us in earlier races.
Just read a little bit about Atlantis, because Atlantis was destroyed. It wasn't part of the natural cycle. It was ahead of time. The time came for Atlantis to be destroyed. All the holy saved, the unholy destroyed, say the stanzas of Zahn. The destruction and sinking of the various islands and peninsulas proceeded gradually, slowly, and bit by bit over thousands of years, eventually resulting in the final great cataclysm, the flooding and submersion of the last island of Atlantis. Some of the relatively small number of people who escaped and survived fled for refuge from the terrible, deadly waters, some of them with the help of the good Atlantean adepts, to the highest and driest points of land they could find, the peaks and mountains of the Himalayas of Central Asia. And it was there that the very beginnings of this, the fifth root race, occurred. Those who may like to read part of an eyewitness account of the destruction of Atlantis can find this in The Secret Doctrine, Volume 2, pages 423 to 429. There's also a short story based on this by Mr. Judge titled Where the Rishis Were, and you can find that in Letters That Have Helped Me. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Way in the back.
Well, it's also the philosophy also talks about this being the dark age.
A little louder.
Oh, sorry. The philosophy also talks about this period of time being the dark age, you know, the Kali Yuga,
mm-hmm.
and it's, which makes it a very materialistic age and makes us separate. And with all the distractions and the materialistic ideas that are out there, the question about why are we so angry, it's, you know, it just seems to kind of follow through with the idea, with that whole separateness idea, that and materialism and distractions that were just, it's a very personal time, and people just don't think about anything else.
The fact is, though, it's no different from any other time. We have had the same feelings and needs and hungers, but nobody knew that I was angry except the people in my immediate circle. So it was a very small thing. Now we're all seeing and hearing each other and reacting and feeling, and that's not bad if we turn it around into a realization we're not separate. We're all going through this together. We all have to help each other and pull each other up. That is brotherhood. Yes?
So how can we start to transform our natural anger into, like, a motive, a cause for, you know, transforming ourselves and our thoughts?
But anger is not unnatural. It's what we do with it. How can we transform that energy into something more positive than just being angry?
I said a natural anger.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
I thought
natural.
You said unnatural.
Yeah.
How can we do that? Well, first we have to change ourselves. And in doing that, we will influence life around us. But we can also encourage others to question and think and challenge themselves. If I'm angry about something, what can I do to repair it, to help make it better? I can become more aware of what's going on around me. We don't know if you've seen any of the latest things about people responding to the needs of other people and animals. People seeing an animal stranded out on cracking ice and then actually going out and risking their own life to save that animal. So there's much that's positive right now in people reacting, but we have to do it for ourselves.
Yeah, I can't see anything else you could say on it.
Okay.
It's we the ones that have to make the change.
Yeah.
Well,
could it be like a maturity, a maturation, like a maturity level of maybe like, kind of like the difference between childlike or childish. Like,
yeah.
You're having a childish tantrum. It's like an uncontrollable explosion of some sort where like maybe it's just like a different, a shift in perspective or something.
You know what's really strange about all of it? We react with anger because we think something is not fair, it's not right, it's not just. If humanity really knew about karma and reincarnation, they would never say that. As Mr. Judge expresses it, we have to realize it's just what I desired. Whatever is happening to me right now, I wanted that in some way, or set up causes thinking I was doing something else. It's my responsibility. So I can't be angry with the life or my parents or the world for getting what belonged to me to begin with. Who was the poet who said, "Nothing can stop my own from coming to me." So once we take that responsibility, we're working on ourselves, and then we can help.
Yeah.
Well, then it seems that it's all a matter of self-control.
Can't hear you.
It's all a matter of self-control.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't learn self-control, who takes control? Or what takes control of me?
Moods.
And there have been admissions recently in the newspapers after some of the most heinous crimes.
Mm.
The admission, I had no control over what I did. And that's a horrifying statement to make. And
but see, once you know something, you can fix it.
That we witness in society, I lost self-control.
Well, it's not a thing that we're encouraged to have in this world. We're encouraged to be consumers. And a consumer does not need self-control. They just need a good credit, that's all. We'd like to close with this from Mr. Judge's Echoes from the Orient. Among the adepts, the rise and fall of nations and civilizations are subjects which are studied under the great cyclic movements. They hold that there is an indissoluble connection between man and every event that takes place on this globe, not only the ordinary changes in politics and social life, but all the happenings in the mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms. The changes in the seasons are for and through man. The great upheavals of continents, the movements of immense glaciers, the terrific eruptions of volcanoes, or the sudden overflowing of great rivers are all for and through man, whether he be conscious of it or present or absent. And they tell of great changes in the inclination of the axis of the earth, past and to come, all due to man. Why? Because man is the thinker on the scene, and the earth is the school. It's the only place where we can learn, where spirit and matter meet in the mind of the human, and they can choose. The brilliance that we see in the lower kingdoms, that's an instinct, a repetition of intelligence directing them. They are responsive. They're not choosing. Only the human can choose. It's how we got into this mess, but it's how we learn. So we can turn it around, but it is up to us to get that self-control and that desire to not want to be angry, but to be actively helping. It doesn't mean that we'll stop the cataclysms or the disasters. It means we'll know which way to run to help others. So, we remind you that next Sunday's subject is the interdependence of all the kingdoms, which really is a continuation of this. Meeting is adjourned.